The Protect Your Neck Podcast, UFC Vegas 94 post-fight show with Dan Tom and Fenyo. And I'm your host, Dan Tom. Analyst is working fine over at MMA Junkie as well as the ActionNetwork.com. But on this year's program, the Protect Your Neck Podcast, we break down high-level MMA. And this time, it's going to be in a recap way. Of course, it's the recap show. We go live for the members only. I got to make it sound super creepy, I guess. But, like, yeah. What's up, Dan Clan? Or make it sound suspect racist. Either way, I got my guy. At Fenyo X Guy Fenyo with me. What's up, Fenyo?
Hey, what's up, everyone? We are here to recap the action as is now the custom now every Saturday or Sunday sometimes, but we're here to talk about fights.
Yeah. We're gonna be recapping tonight. We'll be recapping, of course, UFC Vegas 94, UFC on ESPN 60, UFC Fight Night Lemos versus Janji Joba, or UFC Fight Night Lamosh versus Angie Jones, baby. You know you like the Angie Joba nickname, Fanyo. Don't lie.
I love it, to be honest.
it's so great. She gets the Jobs done, though, man. You know, she really, you know, she gloves up, she, you know, and she gets it done. And we'll talk about that. We'll go from top to bottom, like usual, I guess, for the format. And hopefully, again, you guys can, even if you're not listeners, you're listening to the free previews that I put up on the Protecting Nick podcast feeds. Thank y'all for listening and subscribing, or your free subscriber, Substack. I reward you guys. I put, like, you know, half these shows at least for free on there. So hello to you guys. And, of course, paid Substack members, since you're supporting me, I make sure you get the full video version. Yeah, I think I posted it from the account. I was just on this 80s kick, and you audio listeners probably listen to it, because I'll throw, like, random music, Fenyo, for the podcast, right? Like, I tend to go with the Dark Knight Blaster song for most of the breakdown shows, but I went with another 80s one, or I will for this one, because it's like on an 80s kick for this band, Tears for Fears. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Yeah,
and Yeah. And I was joking, and I was like, oh, this is me and Fenyo on the recap show. And I feel he says, like, something, we're so close, we almost made it, or something. It's too bad they had to fade us. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is so true. But yeah, it's a surprise, folks. It's another losing night here. So thankfully, we got Fenyo here to help get me through it. I was multitasking through some of this card. You know, and I don't expect Fenyo, you to be watching every second. I don't expect most people to be doing that. You should be doing better things with your time, first of all. But hopefully me and Fenyo watched enough of it between each other to piecemeal this whole card, huh?
I'm pretty sure I watch everything as humanity allows you to, because
yeah,
it was rough at the beginning, especially.
I was running errands in the beginning, so I guess that was a good time, as I didn't miss much. But we'll get to those fights. But yeah, basically, let's see if we can try to actually make this short and sweet. Oh shit, he said it. Look in the future so you can do your Willem from Mallrats moment where you be like, Dan, you dumb bastard. UFC Vegas 94 recap. I had to not do the typical sports guy thing, because it's annoying for me. And I wouldn't do that to my guy Fenyo and rope him in here. He makes his own picks, which you can go check out, especially for the pay-per-view cards, over on the plug the Fight Site.com podcast feed for his early prelim podcast and well as the full preview podcast, baby. But as far as me, I did 5-6 overall in picks. 1-0 in straight plays. Angie Jones! We'll get that to that. 0-2 in the parlay for parlays. We'll talk about why there were two parlays for a guy who doesn't like any parlays. And this strengthens that. 1 out of 5 in the props. All the props were round flyers, so they're both interchangeable this week. But yeah, we went 1 out of 5 there, which is generally all you need to go. But hold that thought. As per usual, Fenyo, whether it's 5 legs or 4 legs in the round robin, we hit one of them. And we'll get to it. You tell me how close we were to hitting anything else this week. I had to adjust. Was initially going to have some Tavares by decision. We'll get to that, what happened to that fight as well. But even people who hate Tavares, which that was annoying too. It's just like, it's another one of those things like Alex Perez, all these fighters that I love that everybody just loves to talk shit on. Like, I have to like sit the whole week and listen and see my guy Tavares take strays and stuff. And he didn't even get to fight this week. But yeah, so whenever we go anything but perfect for the round robin, that of course we mean means we go 0-1 in the long shot parlay. Because what I do is I do a parlay of all those low probability, high odd outcomes that I put in the round robin. Because that's what they're built for. They're for fun, people. And this one was only a 1-unit cost. But again, it's another loss. It's another round robin loss to... not just make the people who, you know, like to give me shit feel better, but the people who love to give me shit about my round robins as if the 1 unit is really solely responsible for the swings that my crazy luck bounces, as well as there are some bad bets, because there's no way you don't have a column A and column B when you get to Fenyo. I think, I don't know, Angie Jones might have, like, staved us away, but we were going into the main event. I was down 99 units all time. So I was about to cross that 100-unit threshold. And even if we didn't cross the 100 threshold, we once again crossed the 10 threshold. That is the number 10, right? Because this makes 10 losses, event losses in a row. So quick recap. We win the first Magomed Ankalaev, Johnny Walker, the first event of the year, right, Fenyo? And then I lose 10 in a row, just heartbreaking. After, like, I felt like my luck should have turned last year. Forget about this year, right? Fucking just... just soul-crushing, right? The same people that complain, oh, you complain now, like I tweeted, like, the same people that complain and give me shit for air quotes complaining when I'm just accounting for and recapping the results, these same people will get just as fucking down off 2 or 3 losses that aren't even as bad in a row, or event losses. So keep that in mind, like, no one goes on these streaks, so go on these streaks first. Do this as long as I've done it, to where the schedule beats the shit out of you, whether you win or lose, because the UFC schedule is brutal, secondly. And thirdly, do it on multiple platforms. And not that I'm even big. I'm like fucking F-minus level platform numbers, right? But nonetheless, I'm still more in the public eye than most of the people and on the Twitter. Do that first, then come complain to me. Then you have your permission to go come complain to me. Otherwise, I really could care less at this point. But yeah, we were down. It was a small miss. 1.5 units. 1.52, to be technical. Was a miss. So it was a small miss. And it's like you could say the ads killed me. Like, oh, I added Dober last week, and obviously it was a bad ad because like John Silva was the star of the card, and I was super impressed. But again, it wasn't like I didn't have reasonings. It wasn't from an analytical point of view. It wasn't like the math from the betting line swing didn't justify it on those fronts. And again, just like this week, the ad didn't make or break me. I still would have lost last week. And even though I added 1.5 units, I still would have lost, granted, by $2. I still would have lost this week if I didn't add Aljo and Miranda Maverick, which was the popular parlay this week, Fenyo. And we'll get to those and... how I mushed those. But yeah, with Brad Tavares falling out, I just felt like I needed to add more because I was already under budget and I wanted something kind of chalky for the coverage. You know, I was already playing Verna, who's chalk, but my two overs, you know, we'll get to Cody Durden and Bruno Silva over parlayed with Iron Turtle. And by the way, doesn't the Iron Turtle, Fenyo, doesn't it sound like some weird sex position, you know? Like, oh, I'm doing the Iron Turtle with the old lady tonight. Oh shit, dog! You stretch? You prep? Like, you know, It sounds like something you gotta prep for.
Yeah, that sounds like a serious one. Like.
Sorry. Anyways, back on target. You know, maybe Iron Turtle was trying the Iron Turtle because he fell out of the fight, right? And so, as I was explaining to Fenyo, like, when that happens, the betting house will still hold on to your money, and they keep your parlay alive. They just make it into a shitty straight play, basically, on the over for Durden and Silva, and we'll get to that in a second. But I only bring that up to acknowledge what has changed since the last time I saw you guys for the breakdown show. And to say that Tavares by decision was originally going to be in my round robin, like I said. And even people who hate Tavares were admitting that not just a winnable fight, but yes, of course, as Tavares typically wins by decision. Like, you know, that was a very winnable leg, so it's hard not to have the what could have been there, if that makes sense. Or does that make sense, Fenyo, for the Tavares?
Yeah, for sure. And also, even now that he's losing more often, he remains very hard to finish, especially early. Like, the only, early finish was the Bruno Silva one, right?
Yeah, that's like Bruno Silva's main win condition.
Yeah, just hammering you early. Yep. And then, like, even Robocop, who is like an early finisher, has to take his time to finish Tavares.
Yeah.
And you know, like, the Iron Turtle is a guy that can finish people, has tools, has the backtick, and can pressure with the jab. But, you know, it's a style that even if everything goes wrong for Tavares, it would take a while for Yu-Gi-Oh Park to get there. So I thought that bet was super safe.
Yeah, so that was unfortunate, you know. And you don't want to do that too much of what could have been. But remember how good we felt about, like, even, like, even before John Silva's, not just his last fight, before his last two fights. Remember how good we both felt about him against Gomez? We're like, why is this fight happening? He's gonna wreck Gomez. And, like, again, I think I could do the math on that card, and I still would have lost that. It was only, like, to win a unit. But again, it was like, man, I felt another bet I felt good about, and those are the ones that I lose before I get a chance to get, you know, fucked in the ass with some weird shit on Saturdays. Sometimes they don't even let me wait. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I can just get it over and take them all at once. You know, they got to spread out. They got to spread out the pain, Fenyo.
And also, it's like that one is like double chancy because like maybe in another reality, like Gomez barely makes weight, so he goes into the fight like looking like shit instead of pulling out.
Yeah.
And then John Silva like super wins that fight.
Yeah, and you could have said the same with Tavares. It wouldn't even be a close decision where he has to, you know, where it's back and forth. And so, like, it, not that I wish that on fighters, but hey, again, God forbid one of these weird bounces, right, where a fighter is injured or not 100%. Like, God forbid I'm actually on the right side of that, Fenyo. We'll talk about that when we get to injuries later. You know, or potential injuries. Either way, if we're playing our normal game, we'll get to it. But, yeah, we're still going, like, two for three or three for three. Our normal as far as where did Dan Tom end up on the crazy comebacks, the weird abrupt stoppages where the fighter was up on the cards. Yeah, we'll get to that, folks. But the last thing I want to say about the Tavares thing, aside from my selfish, stupid, speculative ass about something silly as betting, right? Obviously, folks. What was most annoying about it is that for Tavares, is that he was going to beat Michael Bisping, who he's tied for most middleweight appearances. That's huge, you know? That's huge. And then if he would have won, he would tie Michael Bisping for most wins. And then even if you hate the Brad Tavares at that point, you're like, come on, even he's got to at least get one more win before he retires to at least retire with that record, right? You know what I'm saying? Stick it to the Brad Tavares haters, which, by the way, before I bounce it right back to you, Fenyo, and we get to this recap, that was another annoying thing, just like my love for guys like Pantoja or Alex Perez. Tavares is another one of those guys where, being a fan of his, I have to just hear everybody, even people I love and respect, just fucking trashing him, just nonstop. Like, I get it. I'm not saying he's fucking a world champ or he should have won the fights he lost and he's going to win by knockout every time and he's more exciting. Like, I'm not saying any of these things, and I'm a big Brad Tavares fan, right? But at the same time, like, holy fuck, bro. Like, maybe because I know him and he's just like the most nicest, like, salt of the earth fucking dude over a really long sample size through a lot of different fucking accounts of people. So you hate seeing people like that, like, get fucking constantly shelled on the internet. But yeah, that's also really annoying. I had to sit through that again, another week of that. And I don't even get to see the guy fight and, you know, prove people wrong, potentially. So, anyways. I had to get that off my chest.
It makes sense, man. And like, I mean, it's crazy. I understand that, like, not liking fighters, there's, like, a bunch of fighters that I don't like. Right. Yeah. But, like, there are, like, straight good dudes that just get disrespected so bad.
Yeah.
Like, and even by the UFC, like,
sure.
Luckily, like, the UFC seems to like Brad Tavares, like, quite a good amount.
Sure, but he's middleweight.
Like, for example, like, what happened with Nate Maness, it's a crazy shit. Like,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, oh, why would the UFC cut this guy? He's so good. He's in a division that needs talent, and by chance I didn't get those comments, but I usually get that kind of comments like, oh, why do you care if they cut this bomb and that kind of shit? Like, brother, shut the fuck up, right?
Yeah. No. Absolutely. Like, let me see. We'll get to him, but there's a fighter like that definitely is going to fall into the strays that he normally takes. And was he on a crappy... No, yeah. And we'll get to it because, yeah, he fought Ricardo Lamas, and I think he took that fight on short notice. He's one of the few... We'll get to Bill Aljo. Who was, you know, say what you will, and you don't have to like the guy's personality, definitely, and not even his style you have to like, right? But one of those styles where he takes a lot up front. So, of course, again, another reason why, not just my luck or whatever, I'm not trying to play a violin. There's reasons we can point to. I like fighters who aren't popular because I'm a contrarian fuck. And stylistically, I like fighters who take a lot of shit and a lot of damage in the beginning but can wins in like later rounds. And those fighters are always, even when they're successful, I was telling Fenyo, people are always like, oh, that guy sucks. He gets hit way too much. You know, and like they're just constantly swimming up a never ending majority uphill stream of that shit. No matter at what point in their career, no matter how well they're doing, and it's just again, you don't gotta love these people. It's just fucking annoying. It's fucking annoying. And then so when they do lose, and they lose in the exact way that the no tape study, no context, nuance room haters will say, you're just like, oh, great, those people get proven right because that's what we need more of in the world. And I certainly need to fucking lose more. And then unselfishly, again, you look at these guys where they're at in their career, taking two, you know, TKO losses like that. He didn't get signed for Contender Series. So even though he's still getting paid shit, it's probably like too much money for the UFC, air quotes, with the way they like to budget, right? So these guys aren't going to have that much of a leash, even though these guys deserve more of a leash, not just for tenure, but again, back to the Nate Maness thing, who didn't have tenure. He was a really, tall, lanky action fighter, like really, you know, fun guy to throw in matchups and test people, give guys different looks and provide entertainment. God forbid checking off multiple boxes. Sorry. It's fucking frustrating. So it's not just about my bets. It's just, it's on all fucking levels, but that's the sport. Sorry, I'm all doomy. Faniel, save me, but it's this fucking sport. This is what fucking gets rewarded week after fucking week. And you wonder why I have this tone, and I love Saturday so much.
I mean, it does get kind of crazy, like.
I'm not trying to be doomer. There are some good vets and stuff who won. We'll talk about that too with Korea. There, even though Korea didn't have had a rough night overall, there were some bright spots. But let's get to it. Virna Jandijob, Hanji Job. I hate it too because Hanji Job was way easier to say too, which is the fucked up part. Hanji Job, she defeated Amanda Lemos in a very impressive fight. Round two submission saved me from a reverse sweep. But Fenyo, I want you to take the lead on breaking this one down, sir. You were really impressed. Talk to me.
Yeah. I thought if Virna was going to win this one, it was going to be like a big mistake by Lemos, or it was going to be like gritty and ugly, and she was going to be taking like bad shots and stuff like that. And it was a super clean performance, actually. Yeah. The shoot of Virna when she goes for takedowns isn't great, but I feel like the timing is pretty decent. So she gets like very, very safe entries to the takedowns. And she has turned into a very, like, crafty, if unconventional, wrestler against the cage. So if she just gets to drive you to the fence, that's enough for her to start working. Yeah. The weird like leg scene with the hooks and trying to work the upper body trips, the back takes from the back takes standing, and also like the sacrifice throws that if they don't work, she immediately transitions to like X guard or deep half, where she has like so many options and she has become like the word that I would describe Birna's grappling is resourceful, because she's very scrambly, but she can transform those scrambles into control, and that's something that you don't see very often. It's something that, for example, Pantoja does have, and it's like quite peculiar at flyweight, right? Where everyone is always like just scrambling and scrambling and scrambling. And she just like Pantoja, even though they play like different games, but and not so different actually.
No, the deep half as far as the deep half goes. Yeah,
and the transitions to the legs to the back very similar too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they have all these options, but when you have fighters that have all these options to just escape, they have all these options that they can transform into scoring positions very easily. And we saw that with Birna. The deep half immediately, when she was in 50-50 in like leg lock versus leg lock stuff, it was like very clear that she was getting the advantage. She was making sure that her hips were higher. She was always like one step ahead when it came to winning the next step of the scramble. And then at the end, like that like rolling back take that she had at the end, that bolo that she did, that was insane stuff.
Yeah, I love that. Shout out to Ben Cohn as well, because and Fenyo, I'm sure you checked out that episode as well, but you know what I'm talking about as well, where we were talking about Gunnar Nelson and Damian Maya, where the half guard sit up, because and other people were comparing Hanji Jobes to Maya and stuff. Whether or not they were meaning this or not, I don't know. I can't speak for them, but my long winded ass definitely explains what I mean. And in the breakdown episode last week, I was talking about she's got the Damian Maya sit ups as well. She can kind of come up on the, you know, make a lot of hay by just kind of having one leg isolation, whether it's an ashi, a 50-50, a half guard, and she makes a lot of hay from these things. And then in the episode before that with the top five RNC artists with our guy Ben, we were talking about the Gunnar Nelson and Damian Maya fights, where you know your last resort defense once somebody gets so far, not very far by the way, but once they get so far with it, is essentially a whizzer. And that's not gonna. And that's an eventuality once they're walking around toward your back, and you see with Damian Maya like kind of overpower. Where Gunnar Nelson, he's smart. He knows exactly what's coming. It's not that he doesn't know. It's just there's nothing he can do, and he's holding onto that last ditch defense, which is the wizard, to not get your back taken. But eventually, Damian walks around and kind of breaks it, right? And at that breaking point is when Lamos rolls. For that back take, for that rolling back take, I believe it was in round two there, right? And Lemos rolls, but again, something I talked about in the breakdown is that, you know, Hanji Jobes, she's so good, she just needs that one leg isolation. She makes so much hay off of that. And of course she was able to go from, it was almost kind of like similar from like people going from the truck twister to a full back mount. And it ends up turning into that transition. And so it was just like a, it was really just super fun to watch. I actually missed it, the armbar setup, how they got into it. As I was telling my guy Fenyu, I've been really good lately, but can you really blame me going 2 for 20 in events and, you know, another 10 in a row here as I record this? I'll be honest, I clearly, I, I was feeling it tonight. It's just not fun. I haven't been able to work out too for 2 weeks. So
yeah.
I don't have my first, so I'm just like, oh great. The one thing I'm, I still haven't even, and speaking of getting back to working out, I'm still got to get some doctor results that they've been calling me all week, but I literally haven't taken the time, fucking hit the phone and called for the results. Because, well, one, I'm still probably going to have to follow up with the primary anyways. But two, it's no excuse for not doing that. But nope, just fucking deadline after deadline. I did 12 pieces of content. I recorded 3 podcasts, editing all 3 of my own. Thankfully, I got Fenyo's help with thumbnails, artwork, helping me share stuff out. He's really flexible with me. Appreciate you, bro. But yeah, like, it just wears you down, I'm not going to lie, kind of got to me a bit tonight, so I was kind of just like, I almost end up like a Wolverine in the first X-Men, where there's the cage fight in the first X-Men, like 1999, where he doesn't even care to be there, that he's in the fight, he just kind of has his back turned. Like, that's my attitude by the main event, if I'm having a losing night, especially like I was on the verge of a reverse sweep, like, I didn't even want to watch the fights, I'm like, I can't yeah. watch this, I can't watch it. So Fenyo, how was the armbar set up?
So, Birna has the back. She has been fighting for the rear naked choke for a while. They are fighting hands, and you can tell Lemos is like very, very insistent in getting the 2-on-1, mm-hmm. the back grip, and we see like a very old school counter to that that we don't see very often. As is that because she has a 2-on-1 on this side. And that's the side that Birna spins for the armbar. Mm-hmm. So she uses that against her.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it was great.
That's high level. Using grip fighting. I always talk about grip fighting, but that's another level is when you can use someone else's grip fighting against them.
Yeah. And Birna opting mostly for hooks instead of body triangle. That is uh-huh. something that we also don't see too much. Nowadays in MMA, actually we see more like hooks when it comes to just one leg, but like old school like double hooks, something of a rarity nowadays in MMA, and yeah, just like excellent control of the wrist. Lemos tried to spin to go belly down, and Birna wasn't having it. She got blocked with the leg when she was trying to transition, and it was there actually where she tapped. She couldn't get belly down, and on the way back she was already tapping to the armbar. It was good stuff.
Yeah, as far as the Lemos, and by the way, shout out to my guy Ghost, who finally he added this thread before, but he's gonna he did this thing that I'm probably gonna have to do with my half guard thread. Because I got really bummed out. Fucking not only can this shit not broadcast live, Fenyo, because fucking Elon, to Twitter, where we actually get more numbers on that Twitter broad stream, by the way, than YouTube. So all these bros complaining, like, it's like it doesn't affect your actual fucking job. Y'all are on there for entertainment, so it's not even legit entertainment, to fucking troll, fuck with people like me mainly. Like, no, like some of us actually at fucking jobs, and it really fucking broke the space. And for all you people who fucking complain about the media, and I agree with a lot of your complaints, by the way, guess what made it worse? Fucking Elon, all these billionaires, same with fucking Zuck the fucking cuck over there, where we can't even find out about, at least the recent genocides, we know about that and can complain about that or whatever, but like, we didn't even know about what the shit that's going on and getting organized or was able to get organized with the shit he did. Anyways, fuck these billionaires. sorry, I'm on one.
No, I'm all for fuck the billionaires. So.
But so we can't stream that now. And then what else can't we do now? I'm sorry. What was the fucking other thing? I forget. But back to this fight. So this is like, I'm not going to be that guy, especially with like my losing ass Fenyo. Like, I definitely don't want to be Mr. Hindsight. Like, I'm surprised the line was this or whatever. But like for Lemos, like we could talk about it. Oh yeah, I was shouting my guy Ghost, by the way, because I had to do, oh yeah, that's right, the half guard thing. I had to do my half guard things. I couldn't even like see those old videos, and I'm guessing it has something to do with me being a blue check as well. And then it just reminded me, like, how little clicks, like, my literally my favorite thread, Half-Guard thread. Like, I literally go to it all the time, Fenyo. Not just for, like, nerds and, like, oh, you're a little fuck. No, I'm fucking, I use it the most. Actually, at Extreme Couture in the fucking gym when I'm having to illustrate stuff to other fighters. And I'm sending them these links. I'm like, this is what, this is the position. Boom, boom. And amateurs and stuff and people that I help. And I see how little numbers they get. And then, like, I see, like, people highlighting the same thing, and it's good accounts, it's no shade or whatever, but I'm just like, and I see how much numbers, and I'm like, fuck, so then it makes me even feel more like shit, and I'm like, oh yeah, well, no wonder mine's not getting numbers. I'm like, my video's not even playing, thanks to fucking, you know, again, Elon limiting, you know, whether it's non-people that don't want to pay him, or the shit that he's actually done specifically to anybody who was media and marked media, and even though I'm nobody, I did actually get my blue check when I had one through legitimate being recognized as media. You don't think Elon, you know, that was a part of the analytics that he went and fucked with. Yeah, I'm sure it was. Fuck that guy. Fucking milk bag. Piece of shit. Back to this fight. Lemos didn't show any, like, improvements or whatever. Not any improvements. Like, she's shown steady wrestling improvements, but it's all, like, first layer stuff. And her, and it's not too, like, far beyond the stuff that she was kind of already doing good. And the stuff she's always kind of done bad or gotten her in trouble is still the stuff that's getting her in trouble, right? You know, some intersect, like the guillotine. Yeah, she's gotten wins with it. She's got a good one. But it's, she shouldn't, you know, like DC said, she had time before. She didn't have to go, like, the wizard example where it's last resort. Like, it wasn't last resort when she went for it. She was going for it way early.
The first guillotine was, like, a very bad idea. She had she had space for a sprawl. Mm-hmm. She could have tried for underhooks. She went immediately, just accepted position. I guess she was like, I might as well try my luck early in the fight with it, but it was like she didn't like jump a guard aggressively either, so that allowed so Birna felt that the guillotine was close, mm-hmm. and she was like, okay, I'm going to worry about the legs, and like she didn't even fight grips. She was like, I'm going to pass to half guard, and I'm going to put my head to the ground. And the pressure from the guillotine is gone immediately. Yeah. I was never worried about it. It was like the McGregor versus Poirier that was super tight, but Dustin immediately was like relieving the pressure with the head on the floor. And pressuring his shoulders on top of McGregor, like there's no way to crank there.
Yes, absolutely. And also, like, to Lemos' credit, too, like, she didn't seem too, like, frantic. Like, oh, I got this, even, you know, either, like, to her.
Both. Sure.
But then again, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, to her credit, again, it shows she knows that position. But again, if she knows all this stuff, she also kind of should know better at the same time, right, than to put herself in those positions and for sellout stuff. And
I mean, if you're gonna sell out for guillotines, you gotta have like a flowchart to what happens if you don't succeed, right?
Yeah.
Like that's the big problem with for example with the Poirier guillotines is that it's not that they're bad. Like you can tell he has a pretty good guillotine actually, but like every time that you go for a guillotine at this a super high level, you're rolling the dice, and if you're going to roll the dice, you gotta know what's next, right?
Well, that's what I love about Faber's guillotine. They're, you know, everyone says Team Alpha Male guillotine, but if you look at what they were doing, it was he wasn't committing to the half guard. He was keeping like almost like a shin to the belly. Not a knee shield because it's actually inverted or flipped around. Because where the foot ends up, but it's the same thing. It's a horizontal wall block of your shin to their belly, and then the only leg they were worried about was the leg that was kind of, it looked like it was lackadaisically flopped over their back, but it was just so they couldn't pass to the air quote safe side. You know, not
another thing that Faber and also Benavides did with their guillotines, it was like, always that they went for guillotines, never it wasn't always like super close on the grip initially, but they made sure to like stay like super small and very like curved like a ball when they went for the guillotine. So they never went put flat on their backs once they pull guard, and that's where you can kill the guillotine, right?
Yes.
Where you eliminate the you cannot put rotation on it. You put your running flat on their backs. The guillotine is dead. Like, it doesn't matter. You can have it like locked down.
Yeah.
And if you manage to put them flat on their backs, like the guillotine is gone.
Yep.
And they always made sure to just stay so fucking small. Like,
yeah.
Benavides would grab like halfway there guillotine and just like roll over, sweep you, and then just he would adjust from mount. And that was like very, very cool stuff that he used to do.
Yeah, at that point, they would put the full legs around. But that was also what's good about it, because the main guillotine... it's okay, folks. This is better, more interesting than these fights right now. The main mistake for guillotines is people... The novice mistake, which you even see at the high level in fights, people, they pull... instead of crush, and you all see them pull back like, it's like, no, you already know the guillotine's not getting it. They're doing that, they're doing this, and the head's gonna pop out for sure.
It can happen, but it's like,
yeah, you
a
gotta
low
be,
chance. Yeah,
it can happen, but you gotta A, have it like dead to rights good, and B, if you have it dead to rights good, that means the finish is already happening here before you should even get here.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Or they were already tapping before you even got there, so I don't even know if we really credit that technique still, even when it does work.
Actually,
in other words,
yeah.
Right, so and there's a bunch of different guillotine variations, but that is one of the best widest coverage as far as rules of thumb go, right? There are no hard and fast rules, 100%. But the good thing about that leg technique that the Team Alpha Male fighters do is when you use that, when you have that kind of loose leg gripping, because it feels weird, you almost want that half guard, because even though it doesn't necessarily help for the choke, being able to kind of crunch the legs in, it's not like the Darce that, it's not like the Darce or Anaconda or whatever that, what's-his-face nearly got tonight.
Durden went for Anaconda, I think.
Twice. Yeah, it was Durden, the first one where initially he had the leg, but he lost it, and that was a key. But like, for that choke, having a leg definitely is helps, and definitely arguably could be key. But for a guillotine, not necessarily. It makes you feel like you have control. That's why people like that over the Team Alpha Male one. But the Team Alpha Male one, because it feels like, and in a way, technically, yes, you have less control. It encourages that crunching motion, back to that first lesson, that most people forget about. That applies to literally every guillotine, you know, that crunch. And I love that descriptor, that word, that verbiage. Shout out to my coach, Neil Melanson, would always, really, whether we're doing, different type of guillotine variations, it didn't matter. It was that crunch. It was that crunch you wanted. Sorry. Back to this one, though. So I don't want to be the guy in hindsight to finish up that point, Fenyo. But, like, the dynamic seemed, regardless of which side you picked, it seemed fairly clear. But I felt like Lemos was the more popular side, especially amongst MMA gambling bettors. And even before, not to be Mr. Hindsight, even before in the last podcast, I said something, Fenyo. I said, And so tell me if there's any truth to that, as far as both specifically, this seemed kind of like one way or another, it seemed fairly straightforward to call. And B, in general, is there any truth to this? Because my theory to the reason why it perhaps wasn't as straightforward, and even though MMA gamblers and combat sports is just not kind to the older fighter, despite still technically being the underdog, was taking more money here, right? Was taking more public support. And I have this theory, it's like, I feel like it's because, everyone's like, Rab Schneider is the grappler. Like, they make fun of Hanji Jobes, right? Our girl is, I make fun of her name, of course, but I'm a big Hanji Jobes fan. The fighter, both, the fighter. But, like, I think because, and I say this, I say it nicely, at least. I can't speak for others. I say this nicely, but, like, because she's kind of, like, goofy looking. People don't take her seriously, or they have assumptions. And I even use myself, like... okay, maybe even my detractors won't say I'm goofy looking, but like, okay, like nerdy or whatever, like thing you could say about me, and like I feel it, and it's something we all do. It's in other words, I feel like we all judge, like, oh, this person's like, that's why there's that's why there is an inherent racism as far as the unassuming thing for Asians. Anytime they always use Asians in sports where they're like, oh, he's so unassuming. It's like, okay, so you're essentially saying, I expected this person to do jack shit all. Well, why is that? Oh, wait, this person actually has a good record against good people, comes from a good camp. Well, now you're really running yourself into a fucking speculative circle, are we? Why are they so unassuming? And obviously, it's not meant to be racist. I'm not being literal.
It's like the articulation with the black people.
Right? Yeah. It's just like, what about the skill? Like, wasn't there fucking skill in what they did, or did they just light the stick of dynamite and get in the cage? They just start exploding all over the place. You know, like I remember my friend said, James L, who was we were on the amateur fight team together, and he actually accrued some wins before he stopped, and we'd joke about that, and we're like walking in like the mall or something, and like I think there's just like these like this like, and they were like young like little kids, so it made it even funnier, but they were like these little black kids, and he goes, hold on, Dan, and he puts his hand on my chest, like, what? And he goes, ho, we don't want to cross the way, these kids might explode on us. like you've been watching too much sports, James. You've been watching too much sports broadcast. They don't all explode, okay? That's fine. It's fine. But yeah, like, but is there something to that? You know, like, you know, where like I was joking. I'm like, yeah, well, like, so if you look like Brad Pitt, you could be like, hey, you know, you should, anytime you go over 40 miles per hour in a car, you need to unbuckle your safety belt. And you'd be like, should I? That looks like he knows what he's talking about. You know, you start questioning it, right? Like, because he looks so, like, this guy's a Chad, right? But then you have someone like Hanji Joba, who is just like, you know, the sky is blue, and if you buckle your safety belt, statistically, you know, there's less chance you're gonna die. And we were just like, shut the fuck up, nerd! Nerd! Like, yeah, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, am I over-exaggerating, or is there something to that thing, you know?
No, there's a lot to that, actually. Like, and it's with people like this that people don't even learn lessons, because, like, she's coming off fighting a very athletic fighter in Lupi Godinez. And one that you could argue it was like a worse matchup, because like Lupi is such a good wrestler that you could say like, oh, so Birna doesn't have any path to victory in that fight, right? And then she'll wrestle her. So it's just like she can deal with athletic fighters just fine. Going back to my usual stuff that I always say, like, rewatch against Sidharan versus Birna is super close. It never looks like Birna cannot compete with her. So, I mean, Birna has some qualities that make her look goofy. Like, she isn't, like, super coordinated. And also, she's not, like, a super, like, comfortable striker that always makes you look kind of goofy. But, like, during every tie-up, she's so strong. Like, she's not like this, like oh, silly jiu-jitsu player. She's like a legit fighter. Like,
yeah.
Like, people don't learn. I don't understand why. It's like with the striking with Pantoja. Like, yeah, he looks wild. He throws wild, and he looks tired. But, like, he's doing smart stuff, and he's hurting people, like, super often, so...
Yeah.
How can you say that he's that bad, right?
It's those optics, right? And then if Pantoja loses in... Not even in a later round. Pantoja starts to look tired in, like, round two, right? Like, so even if Pantoja loses in round two or onward, right? People are going to be like, see, I told you, he was never that good. He's tired. He sucks. And, you know, it's like...
I think he wins the fifth round against everyone.
Yes, yeah. They forget conveniently forget that. But, you know, again, I can obviously relate. So, yeah, last thing on this fight before we push on, because it was just the most important fight on here, say what you will, about the card offerings. It was the right main event as far as what they had to work with. But for as goofy as she looks, Fenyo, for as uncoordinated as she is on the feet and off balances... How much swag does she have, though? Because she's got a lot of swag, man. Like, she's got, like, the pictures, like, post-fight with the two beer mugs. She's singing in her post-fight speech. She's got the fucking sweet vest that, like, matches the Starbucks sleeve on her cup. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? She's got so much swag.
She's so cool, man.
So, I love Jendy Roma, yeah. I love it, dude. Hanji Jobes. I say it endearingly, folks. So she's I've been a fan. She's already cashed bets for me before because she just was that dog. And again, I love these fighters who everybody underestimates, you know?
Yeah, I remember when she debuted and against Carla, and she has gotten so much better since.
And Carla's another fighter who, despite having way more accomplishments than even, you know, Hanji Jobs and most of the fighters on the female fighters on the roster, people always hate on her too. So then the fact that she lost to somebody like Carla, people were just like, oh, she must suck. You know, again, you know, they just look at the record and the judging crowd. Like, so it's just really frustrating. It's like, oh.
I remember in that fight against like Esparza, because Yadirola tried so inverted guard stuff. Yeah. She went for an inverted triangle.
Yeah.
And she was like playing like actually like reverse guard. And everyone on MMA Twitter at the time were like, oh, that stupid reverse guard shit, that would never work. You can tell she's like a beginner grappler.
Oh.
And then, now, look at her now, right?
She has more grappling credentials in and out of the gi than like Claudia Gadelha, you know, as far as like, you know, accoladed female grapplers, you know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu grapplers.
Yeah, I mean, it took her a while to like adjust some of the stuff to MMA, I feel.
Mm.
But because obviously, like, she hasn't gotten that much better at grappling when it comes to skill, I feel, because she was competing so actively back then. Yeah. But for sure, she has finally gotten a hold of the meta of MMA. So she's now like very hard to maintain positions. I would say this is kind of a hot take. She's harder to style from top position than Mackenzie Dern. We've seen sure. Mackenzie Dern like be on top, and yes. if fighters like really try to just style her, they stay very safe. But I feel like Birna has become like a better passer, and she's just like takes these chances with these crazy scrambles where she gets those like options to get to the ground. I feel like Dern is because she had a more aggressive style in jiu-jitsu.
Yes.
She's more used to the other grappler to reacting to her.
Yes.
So when they try to stall her, she like run out of ideas sometimes, I feel.
That's a great point. And before I put my foot in my mouth with some more non-MMA grappling talk, let me just correct this. Say, no, I think actually Gadelha is still one of the fighters that would be more accoladed than her, because she's one of the most accoladed. I think she's got like the, without looking at it, some type of Mundales or like one of the more respected jiu-jitsu tournaments. It's not as bad as kickboxing, because there actually are like legitimate, you know, jiu-jitsu tournaments you can decipher through, right? So it's not like kickboxing or anything like that, but it does get murky, because a lot of the women come from that end, so they actually, even ones that aren't good, actually might have like more accolades than you think. And as somebody who goes to these bios on the weekly, but Hanji Joba is up there, and I like that point. I didn't watch all of Mackenzie Dern stuff religiously, but I did go back to watch her jiu-jitsu stuff, right? And that was another reason why I've never been high on her, because that theme of opportunism, which is less and less reliable at the higher levels, at least in MMA especially, she like you said, relied on a lot of reactions. And she struck me as much more of an aggressive opportunist in jiu-jitsu, which is fine. Like, she had a lot of the natural skills and athleticism, but with all the other things that MMA incorporates, you don't have to be a process-based fighter, but even the best opportunists, the most dangerous knockout artists, like, you hit a ceiling when you get to the top level of the divisions.
You gotta understand that. And people sometimes don't understand why this happened, and you gotta understand that in jiu-jitsu, unless you go to a very silly fight, like, and it usually involves an MMA fighter, like, we go back to, like, Brendan Schaub versus Cyborg.
Yeah.
Is that in jiu-jitsu, no one is trying to stall, because they're trying to win.
Yeah, yes.
So they rarely see these stalling tactics over there. Because they're trying to be offensive. When they're on their bare backs, they are constantly trying to sweep. They're constantly trying to set up submissions. It's very rarely that you see someone like just like grabbing a triangle with their arms and just holding on to their life. So
yeah,
that's an adjustment that fighters, grapplers, need to learn how to deal with that when they transition to MMA.
Yeah, not even just the strikes, right, Fenyo? As far as scoring goes, but the fact that the rounds, not just for scoring, the fact that there are rounds means you do have to have stalling tactics and certain things and be strategic with positions, unlike some big pride round, you know, or with variating rules within it, right? You know, I mean, obviously there's different rounds if you progress through the tournament structure. I'm just talking about rounds in the individual fight, air quotes, because I know a lot of jiu-jitsu people like to call their matches fights, which always felt funny to me, but neither here nor there. Maybe that's a reason why, shout out to my guy, Neil Melanson, who's a catch wrestling coach, would have us do drills like, I hated these drills, by the way, and I fucking always ended up doing pull-ups, where we would go rounds of grappling, and he would say stalling is a skill, and basically a person on bottom either submitting, you have to submit or sweep to win, and as soon as you sweep it, you win, and the person has to go do 10 pull-ups, and the person on top has to keep them on their back for, and it wasn't a whole like round, like a whole MMA round or even amateur MMA round, it was probably like anywhere just from like a minute to 2 minutes, which is probably long once you get to the 2 minutes, but definitely at least a minute, which is a long enough time. Believe when you're going urgent, everybody's go, right? 1 minute, and you gotta, and if you fail to hold them down, you're doing pull-ups, or if you get held down, you can't sweep or submit, you know. And it's annoying because that's the goal, so they can play it as conservative and cheap as they want to, right? And you're like, fuck. And yeah, man, like literally nine times out of, I probably would win maybe one round. It was both embarrassing, and then I ended up getting so tired that I wouldn't care about the embarrassment. that drill though did make me good at maybe not submitting off my back or sweeping, but I did get really, you know, really decent, I should say, at the as far as working inside of a guard, installing and stuff. But yeah, it's like you don't think about that. That's not a sexy drill, right? But there's but it comes in.
It's comes a skill that is very useful, and even stalling from in MMA is very useful. We saw early in the night that fight between what's their names, Haider Amil and Young Lee, where Lee did not have defense on the feet.
Yeah,
like in that case, like you're better off shooting a bad takedown and stalling from guard. That's way safer than getting hit on the head like time and time again, right?
Yeah, or you know, push him into the fence. You know, come up to a clinch, or if you get caught on your knees, just swim for that. I always say swim for the single because the only available target is an illegal target, and the only person that is smart enough to do that is one of the dumbest guys, Cody Brundage, but he's smart enough to swim for the single. And then he gets a legal shot, and then everybody blames him. And I'm like, no, that's the point. That's why you're supposed to swim for the single, because it keeps you safe. The only way it doesn't keep you safe is if the person fouls, and in that case, you win.
Yeah, pretty much.
But you know, like we talked about already, I'm not going to beat that dead horse. Of course, in MMA, we blame the fighter first, always, first of all, because they don't get the bill enough in this game. But furthermore, we have to blame the fouled fighter first, right, Fanyo? That's how it goes.
Pretty much.
Anyways, Steve Garcia, the mean machine, or as I like to call him, the cream machine. look at his Tapology photo, by the way. Do you have that up? Do you have Tapology up in a window? And if you're a listener, pull that up. Look at his photo. It looks like his name is the cream machine. Doesn't it look like he's like hooked up to something right there? Are you looking at it, Finio?
The Tapology photo?
Yeah.
Let me get that.
As he pulls it up, Steve Garcia defeated Sungwoo Choi, round one.
That picture is crazy, man.
Yeah, does that look like his nickname should be the Cream Machine?
He's screaming so hard there.
It looks like that old viral He-Man edit, where it was the He-Man cartoon, and they did it like it was like a bunch of Steve Garcia poses right there, where they made it like sexual, where the guy was like. And then they're playing Four Non-Blondes. And I said, hey, what's going on?
Yeah.
And like, it looks like.
I was thinking of it.
That's what it looks like. He's. And I said, like, he just looks like he belongs right in that music video, The Cream Machine.
But we need an edit about for that.
Yeah, we do. It's Cream Machine. By the way, shout out to the Co-Main Event podcast. They have a listener called Jizzy B who writes into their show. and they also have a listener called Creamy Steve. And I'm sure Creamy Steve would appreciate. He's probably a fan of Steve Garcia, but I bet you he appreciates the Cream Machine nickname.
Pretty sure, man.
But he creamed Sungwoo Choi, man. This is bad. I hate to say this, and I'm gonna do that typical. I have a black friend, so this is okay. Move. Shout out to my guy Sam Yang. from Southpaw Podcast. It's a good excuse to shout my guy Sam in Southpaw Podcast, by the way. But he's a Korean who knows MMA well and knows all things Korea very well. And even he always says, he's like, God damn it. He's like, why can't us Koreans have defense? Like, why? Why? Why can't we block? And I'm like, and I want to be like, almost like, especially his favorites, not that he was a favorite here, but for previous fights, like, I always say this, I'm like, I can't trust the, because I've been burned so many times, I can't trust these Korean fighters at chalk prices, because you're paying extra to back them, for one. And from the really talented guys, and proven guys, to the not so proven guys, they're all fucking wild guys, man.
They're so crazy, man.
Like boxing too.
Really, yeah, aggressive. Yeah. I mean, they call them the Mexican of Asia for a reason in boxing.
Yeah, like I hate to like fall on the stereotypes, but A, that's true. And I used to joke on this podcast, Fenyo. I was like, they almost call Fast and the Furious race wars. By the way, how funny is that? Race wars. Like. Even someone whose English is a second language, you see the comedy, the obvious comedy in that, and they almost fucking called it race wars. But my favorite race wars, by the way, is Mexico versus Korea in combat sports. Like, it's always a good fucking fight. Like,
yeah,
what was it? Polo, I almost went Pollo. Polo Reyes in UFC 199, one of the best cards. It kicked off
against Dong Young Kim,
Yeah, I remember certain sites used to put Dong Young Kim too, and then eventually he just went to Dong Young Ma. But that guy,
for Maestro, right?
Dude, Maestro. It was brutal because he got slammed, like rampage KO'd by like real Steel, Dominic Steel or whatever. Like, he got like some meme fucking knockouts, and it sucked because
that one was crazy, man.
Dude, that was the Korea card. Yeah, in his hometown too, and I felt bad because like. A, it's like, I want to see the Asians do well, and I don't want to see stereotypes, proven right as far as, like, these guys are just fucking wilding out, But this dude would just go, it doesn't matter how bad he got knocked out, he would learn, like, kind of like a Sungwoo Choi, he would learn no lessons, and he comes right in the next fight and does the same shit. But, by the way, it was even worse for Dong Young Ma, because he looked like Glenn from The Walking Dead, who I was a big fan of. And it would just give me, and I'm not gonna do the every MMA podcaster thing or whatever and fucking spoil every from Brendan Schaub to Matt Serra, and I like Matt Serra, but holy shit, they're the fucking worst. As soon as I hear him bring up I don't listen to Schaub anymore, but for Unfiltered, I'll listen to interviews, and he'll bring up, because he doesn't prep for the interview, so he'll bring up like whatever he's watching, and if it's something that I want to watch, I have to fucking hit fast forward. Fuck, he's gonna spoil it.
He just spoils the whole.
It's just nonstop. It's the fucking worst. I don't know what it is, but I'll just say that watching fucking Dong Young Ma get fucked up just gave me PTSD from that show, and it was bad. And like Sungwoo Choi, I got the same vibes, and I called for this one wasn't, but another Korean fighter got stopped by standing stoppage, but I wrote this one to be a standing stoppage, and I was like, oh, wrong Korean. But I'm like, but you know what, not to get stereotyped, but I'm like, if you're gonna predict standing stoppages, you should do it against Koreans, because they're tough as shit, and it's gonna take like the rare MMA standing stoppage if they don't go unconscious to get him out of there,
pretty much. Yeah.
Like, it's fucking Christ. Anything to say about that? I don't have anything else to say about this fight. Sorry, I know it's to high level analysis, folks. Race, my race analysis.
Race wars.
Race wars. Sorry. Family. Sorry. It's got dark.
Yeah. The recaps always get kind of sketchy. Yeah.
The Brazil movie. Race wars. This is the buildup would be even more intense. Sorry for the abrupt interruption there, but you guys know the drill. This concludes the free preview. Appreciate you guys for the full version/video version of this. You can check out my YouTube, become a member, the Dan Clan at DanTomMMA, or support me via Substack at DanTomMMA, where you can get all my free content plus extra stuff like the full versions of this. Enjoy yourself, and hopefully you enjoyed this. So, see you next week.